Conference. Conference recording.
Okay, so we are recording right now, and I wanted to begin with introductions, just so we know who's on the line. If you could, we'll do a round table. Introduce yourself with you giving your name, which community you are from, and what's your position, what is it that you do in your field of work. And so it's going to be a little discombobulated because of, everybody signing in at the same time. So what I can do is for the people that I know, I can start by asking your name and then you can sign in if that works for everybody. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Okay, so Cindy Underhill.
Hi, Cindy Underhill, the Recreation Director in Carmack.
Thank you, Cindy. Cynthia White.
Hi, I'm Cynthia White, and I am the Recreation Programmer in Fort Smith and the BT.
Okay, just a second, Cynthia. So you Recreation Programmer?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm typing this down as well, making notes for myself. Okay, and Fort Smith. Perfect. Thank you, Cindy. Hi, Cynthia. Patrick.
Hi. I'm Patrick Keenan from the Boys and Girls Club of UConn. I'm based out of Whitehorse, and I'm the Middle Years Program Director.
Thank you, Patrick. Okay. Got it. Jana.
I'm Jana Chase. I'm originally from Whitehorse, but I'm currently living in Ontario, running my own recreation company called Go Adventures.
Thanks, Jana. Lydia.
Hi, I'm Lydia from Whitehorse, and I'm the program coordinator for Special O.
For Special O?
Special, yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Ursula.
Yeah, hello. My name is Ursula Engler, and I'm a leader with our team, Tagus.
Thank you, Ursula. And for those of you who don't know where Tagus is, it's about an hour outside of Whitehorse. Perfect. Let me see. Natasha.
Hi. I am the recreation consultant with
Industry Recreation
Trust Association and also
the
coordinator for
High
Five in the
Texas Surgery. And I am one of the owners. Perfect. Thanks, Natasha. Let me see. Oh,
I wonder. Let me see what's the action. Hi, guys. So I work at Whitehorse, but I work also at UConn, and I work as a health and fitness consultant with my own company called Fresh Strategy.
Perfect. Thanks, Sue. Perfect. I'm just looking down the line here. Is there anyone else that I have not called forward? That's on the line? No? Okay. So, without further ado then, if anybody else comes on, I think I'll be notified. Thank you everybody for that. And I would like to introduce our guest speaker today. We have Chris Fenlon-McDonald, who is from Calgary, Alberta, and Chris came up to Whitehorse. How long ago was that, Chris? 4 weeks? A month ago? Are you there, Chris? Chris, are you there? Oh, my goodness.
Sorry, no, I'm here. Sorry, I had my phone muted so I wouldn't interrupt anybody.
Okay.
And I was talking to myself for a couple of minutes. I'm glad
that you're here. Okay, getting a little worried there. Okay. All right. Chris, I was just going to say that you came up and were a guest speaker for the Department of Education with a physical literacy seminar, and I'm guessing it was about a month ago?
It seems like it was yesterday, but I think you're right. It was probably early March.
There we go. Thank you. Sorry, it's all a blur to me. Anyway, so Chris, by trade, is a physical education teacher, and he's taught primary children. He's a father of two very, very cute little daughters. I've only seen photos, but they are very cute. Very physically active family. Definitely walks the talk and talks the walk. And he is currently a consultant with Everactive Schools in Calgary, which promotes physical literacy, I guess, in a nutshell. And I was able to sit in on his session on keeping girls active, and I found it fascinating, very, very important topic, And so that is why I brought forward this topic for us to discuss. So before I head it over to you, Chris, I just want to let people know, I think Chris has this presentation, and when, at some point we'll open the floor. If anybody has questions or wants to add a comment, please feel free to do so. At this time, I'm asking if everybody could press star 5, which will mute you while you're listening to Chris, and all you have to do, wait a minute, sorry, star 6, my apologies. Star 6, mute individually, and anytime during the conversation if you want to speak, all you have to do is hit star 6 again. So if everybody could do that right now, that would be fantastic.
Sorry, can you repeat that, Mia?
Yes. All I'm asking is if you press star 6, that will mute you. And then anytime you want to speak during this session, you just have to press star 6 again, and it will unmute you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. There we go. Okay. I think everybody's muted except myself and Chris. So without further ado, and Chris, please feel free to embellish anything and if you want to let them know a little more about yourself. And thank you so much for coming on the line today. I really appreciate it. So I'm handing it over to you, Chris.
Awesome. Thank you. That was an awesome introduction. I really appreciate all of that and definitely enjoyed my time up north. It was a wonderful experience, and I was super fortunate to spend some time with friends that I hadn't seen for about a decade as well. So it was all in all just a professional and personal Yeah, really good, really important time for me. So it was good, and are able to connect and to talk about some of these things. So Mia sent out a link. The link that you received, hopefully, if it all works, should be a link to a Google Drive. I listed the restrictions on there, so you should be able to view the document. If you haven't, somebody will hopefully chime back in and let me know if it's not working. And it is just a PDF. Going through it, I just realized there is a second slide, the link that says welcome, please use this to sign in. I thought I deleted that one, but it's still there. You don't have to worry about signing in. That was for a previous presentation that we had done, and that survey link is an incorrect survey, so no problem there. So we're here today to talk about a session promoting girls' health and well-being. This session or this presentation was developed for our time when we were up north in Yukon. Working with the teachers and the group up there. So it's still relatively new to me, but very important to me when I talk about my family, and somewhat new to Everactive Schools. So hopefully, I think when I had gone up there, I was just often looked at myself as a bit of a facilitator. I think the expertise really lies in our virtual room here today and going through all these organizations and I guess jobs that each of you hold. I think there's a wealth of knowledge on this line, so hopefully after this presentation we'll be able to draw out, maybe there's some highlights or there's some aha moments that we can connect on, but really draw out some of the expertise that's here together. So where are we going? So if you are following along on the slide deck, if it works for you, we're looking at slide 4. This is a bit of an overview of our talk, I guess. It's an uphill climb, I think, to promote girls' health and well-being in some respects, and we'll look at why that is. We'll look at areas of focus and how best we can take action to support girls' health and well-being. We'll touch on a socio-ecological model in comprehensive school health. So whether or not you're working with schools within the school, kind of the school realm, comprehensive school health is becoming more of a common vernacular. Maybe in some ways it's looked at as a slightly different language, but the concept is still the same. Outside of schools, it's built on a model called the socio-ecological model. And then ultimately, I think physical literacy is an excellent tool to promote health and well-being of girls within our programs. So Everactive Schools, many of you may not have worked with us, though we have worked with some people in Ontario, Janice. I'm not too sure if you've interacted with some schools or a few out there, I'm sure. But Everactive Schools, we're essentially a provincial organization within Alberta who are trying to support health and wellness within Alberta schools. So we're cross-ministerial, which means that we're funded by three ministries, which I'll talk about in a minute. And we're an initiative under the Alberta Teachers Association with our goal of providing health and wellness supports for schools, and ultimately under the Health and Physical Education Council. So within many teachers' associations, sometimes there's a middle year council, a science council, language arts. In Alberta, there's a Health and Physical Education Council. We're the only council in Alberta that has a body like us that works underneath them. So pretty unfortunate.
The participant has joined the conference.
So, Dean Peter?
Welcome. So we're funded by the Alberta Culture and Tourism, Alberta Education, and Alberta Health. What's quite unique about that is that it really gives us the a breadth of scope of what's happening within schools. So our primary stakeholder is Alberta Schools, but we know within education that only Alberta Education doesn't support the health and wellness of schools. It's just as well, or just as important to look outside of our buildings as well. So these ministries really support the work that we do, and we're quite fortunate to bring their perspectives forward in that. My background, as Mia mentioned, was a physical education teacher in a K-3 setting in Calgary, and there's a slide in there of some of the fun happening within our phys ed program. So what was unique about that opportunity is really the opportunity to work with the entire school. And I think if you're in a setting where you have a physical education specialist, they really have a good idea of most of the school, because they often will come and work with all teachers in the school, and they see all the things. And so when we're talking about building health and changes, sustainable changes, then I think working with those specialists within schools is a really good avenue into the schools. And maybe it's a music specialist, maybe it's a phys ed specialist, maybe it's a math or language arts. It's hard to say how the school is structured. So let's start talking a little bit about why it's perhaps an uphill climb. And I think this is, I think we have personal experiences here that will vary in terms of why we might feel this is the case. But if we look at slide number 9, if you're following along, the happiness and physical activity slide. So this was we work closely with an organization called Sports for Life, and they're a national body in some cases, and they do a lot of research in some of these areas. And this was a self-assessment that children had gone through. You can see their age ranges at the bottom. I think the assessment's called Play Self, if you're interested in checking it out. And there's a particular question on there that says, I believe that being physically active makes me happier. And if you follow along, the blue lines indicate responses from boys, and the girl green lines indicate responses from girls. And around that age of 8 and 9, you start to see a decline in girls responding that they are, or they believe physical activity makes them happy. And there's a variety of reasons. I think we could dive into perhaps why this is the case, but that's certainly an alarming statistic. And I've got 2 young girls that are not there yet. They're 4 and 2. But that's certainly something I'm aware of, and I become quite critical of experiences that they have. And I'll start to become more critical of those experiences as they start to age as well, because obviously there is research happening in this area that shows that decline. When we look at percentage of people that are physically active, we can also look at the next slide, which shows this is a U.S. statistic, but Canada is on the heels of this and pretty close. Ages 6 to 11, we can see right in the middle there that 41% of those children are meeting the moderate and vigorous physical activity guidelines, 60 minutes of MBTA daily. And those numbers start to drop again as you go up to 12 to 15, and you can find your own kind of age bracket to see. And what's important to note is these are self-reported numbers also. And self-reported numbers are often a large percentage of those numbers that overestimate how physically active they are. So, kind of an alarming reality is that our populations, generally speaking, are not very physically active. And sometimes that's hard to see, because I know that if I look around me, I'm sitting at a university right now, and it seems like our populations are quite active in many of the settings that we're in. That might seem like the case. And I think there is some new research that's coming out to show that we've maybe slowed that those falling numbers slightly in the past couple of years, so the collective work that we're doing is improving, but it's still a bit of an uphill climb to get both boys and girls more active. If we continue on in the slide, this is another slide from Sport for Life, and this just shows some competencies in a variety of activities. The blue lines that extend to the right indicate the number of times that boys or males are more competent than girls in a particular skill set. And on the left-hand side is the equivalent for girls. So you start to see girls becoming more competent in hopping, galloping, and skipping. I would say those are very fundamental movement skills. So when you start to look at fundamental sport skills, such as overhand throws, one-handed catch, dribble, etc., you start to see boys becoming a lot more competent in those areas. And we'll start to explore in a little bit maybe some reasoning why those numbers are that different. The next slide is hard. I can't in a PDF share a video, so I'm going to encourage you to have some time afterwards, and I'll share these links with you. This video called Beat the BS, and the video is a bit of a satire, so please don't take it literally, but it does share common, we would likely say misconceptions, but some common beliefs and things that science has believed for a number of years as well. And it plays on it a little bit, but it kind of gives you a bit of a reality check of how we potentially treated young girls and women in sports and how that related to their health and well-being in relation to physical activity as well. As I continue to kind of to dive in to figure out, you know, what are we up against when we're exploring this concept, I thought, okay, I'm going to do a quick Google search for the term professional athlete. And I found out of 47 images just doing a general Google search that two of them were actually women. The rest were other objects or pictures of men. And Google's quite interesting because of the, I would say, the algorithms and the analytics and such that start to generate those images is often based on actual searches and what the media might be driving the term professional athlete. Again, as you continue to look at this uphill climb, there's another video, or if you're on social media, hashtag cover the athlete. But if you did a quick Google search for cover the athlete, this really will maybe stop you in your tracks if you haven't seen it. But this was an interview or a series of interviews posing questions that were posed to women athletes. And it was a stark contrast to what was being posed to male athletes. And the just maybe the inappropriateness of some of the questions being asked are things that you would never or would never have seen asked to men participating in sports. So it really makes you stop and think, why is there such a discrepancy in the way that media is portraying female athletes?
Nadine, because you joined us late, I didn't get a chance to ask you. If you could press *6 to mute your phone, and then whenever you want to speak and ask a question or join in on a discussion, all you have to do is press *6 again to unmute it, okay? Thank you.
And feel free, if there's a question that comes up, if you want to ask it immediately, you can, or if you want to jot it down, you're welcome to jot it down as well. So this hashtag social media campaign starts to evolve a little bit as I was researching this and trying to figure out what we're up against, and I came across another one called Fear is Free, and it just showed, and some of these numbers you really have to understand behind, so I'll try my best to explain them, but 4.2 million people tuned in to watch the NCAA championship between these games, that was women's basketball, so there is a huge desire for women's sports within the media, but there's very little actually being portrayed on television and through social media channels. The other one is 1.16 million, so again, large number of people tuning in between the U.S. and Canada, granted that Olympic hockey, and maybe internationally driven, and a large population in North America, still a big desire to see women's sport. And then lastly, so this Here's Proof campaign came from Tucker Center, so you'll see that image up in the top right corner of that next slide. This continues to show some differences. And granted, the teams played, so if we look at the Men's World Cup versus the Women's World Cup, if you are a soccer or you know much about soccer, I'm new to the sport. But I know the teams were different, but it still shows that large numbers of people are tuning in to watch women's sports versus men. There is a huge desire to see that, and there's maybe some reasons for that. Maybe it's not as evident on our social media feeds or on our television, so when opportunity arises, people are taking the time to check that out. But it is illustrating that there's a desire to see women's sports just as much as men, but it isn't being seen. And we'll talk about role models in a bit and why it's important that it is seen, especially for our young girls, for their health and well-being. So that's a recap, and I think this could you could really go down a rabbit hole with finding these examples. There were some other examples that I had found since my time up north, but the list would just continue on and between the discrepancies between the way men and women are portrayed within physical activity or the opportunities for their physical activities to be showcased. So we can move on. So if we're we know what we're up against. I guess the question is, okay, what are some actual things that we can, what are some tangibles to take away to start changing that? And a lot of the times, I think it just becomes good, and I'll use the term teaching practice, and regardless whether you're by trade a teacher, I think we're all teachers in some respect. And I think good teaching practice is really going to set the stage for quality experiences for young girls, just as it would for young boys. But having some understanding of these three particular components is important. So acceptance and social connection is going to be very important in the way that we develop programs for young girls, and skill acquisition as well. And then finally will be role models, which is very, very important because you can, I'll say this again, I'm sure, but you can't be, young girls can't be what they can't see. So let's talk about acceptance and social connection. So social connection, some of the questions that comes up is, you know, do I feel that I belong in this group or in this class or this club or this sport? Friends become a very important connection. So am I making new friends are good questions that we want to be considering for young girls. Do I wish I could spend more time with friends that I've met within physical activity or sport experiences? Outside from formal learning and games are important questions that girls are going to be asking. So if we go to slide 20, so we see the male-female symbols here. What's important in I would say developing programs or the way that your classes are set up or just even things in the back of your mind when you're considering and doing a bit of an environmental scan is how these are being developed and opportunities for boys and girls to achieve effort, performance, and acceptance. And those three pieces are research. Those have come from Dr. Vicky Harbour, University of Alberta. She's done a lot of work in this area, and she's found that boys in a physical activity setting will rely first on their efforts in order to get to some performance with the final goal of being accepted. So in their social connections, they're most worried about acceptance last, but they're displaying it with effort first. Whereas girls, on the flip side, will be looking at acceptance first. They'll most be worried about, those questions. Am I fitting in with my friends? Am I making new connections? Before they're going to display a level of effort in order to achieve performance at the end. So in some ways, physical activity for boys can be a tool to get to their acceptance. Girls are worried about that acceptance much earlier on. Communication and trust become very important in those circles as well. And if we move on to the final slide, culture, eat strategy for breakfast. And that's something that kind of helps this social connection piece. Because if we want to develop some acceptance for young girls, knowing that if we want to get to effort and performance, we have to go through that acceptance phase first. We should be reflecting on our culture. So what does acceptance and social connection really look like in our program would be a step to kind of stop and think about. Have we designed a program that fosters acceptance or social connection or belonging? Are there cliques, and if so, how do they impact the environment? Sometimes they can be very useful. Sometimes they could potentially be damaging, depending on how big our programs are. And how can we manage those cliques if they do happen? I know if there is some group that, like I said, I don't think cliques are a terrible thing, but if they can be utilized to bring in people, then I think we're around that acceptance piece, around that social acceptance, then I think they could be valuable. And I just have a couple other questions or notes that I put down here. And then ultimately, how does that culture happen? So if we think about programs, and some of these are a lot harder to achieve if we're running recreational programs where young girls might be just coming for an hour to our program. But I know the last time we had this discussion, we talked about social opportunities. There was a volleyball coach hadn't had an opportunity to really field a team of young girls. And rather than just running tryouts, they started with developing a social network first, maybe not directly recognizing this acceptance effort performance sequence, just intuitively knew that they had to get a group of girls together who trusted each other, felt that they belonged. And then created a team from that group of girls to develop a volleyball team. It was a good strategy to worry about that relationship first rather than fielding a team, doing tryouts, et cetera, and then trying to build the relationship afterwards. So that kind of looks at our the first part of our acceptance and social connection. And then we'll move on a little bit to skill acquisition and some considerations for skill acquisition. There's a slide in there that says caution adults at play. We won't hop into a multi-territory province game here, though that could be fun. But just some understanding of skill acquisition. So when we're looking at young girls in particular, understanding what skills they've learned, maybe trying to identify what the most challenging skills or what type of skills that they want to accomplish. Understanding those early on is important. What's the hardest skill perhaps that they learn and trying to identify perhaps why that is so hard. And then what's important to bring in here is confidence and how do young girls feel that this will happen and how will they build confidence? Is this something that happens over a period of time or can happen shortly? And this confidence thing will play a big role in when we talk about physical literacy in a little bit. So if we think about skill acquisition, there's a bit of a cartoon in there. This isn't this is something that's probably common in many circles, but it's kind of amusing from an educational perspective. For a fair selection, everybody has to take the same exam. Please find that tree. And all those animals in that cartoon are going to struggle to different degrees in attempting to climb that tree. So when we're developing programs or we're setting physical activity programs up, knowing that the journey for each of our participants to get there is going to look much different, but having that understanding first and foremost is important to kind of stop and again, maybe a bit of an environmental scan of are we teaching skills that are appropriate. Best example I can maybe talk about is maybe many examples. One in particular is being up at a school that I was visiting at. It was a K-3 school, and on their playground, they had basketball nets, and of course they were 10-foot basketball nets. But having 10-foot basketball nets for girls, or for boys and girls, particularly in a K-3 setting, is very discouraging for them to maybe want to develop a skill around throwing a basketball or attempting to play that game. And then the other consideration also in other schools is if you've heard of a teaching games for understanding approach, it might talk about in Bayesian games, similar to basketball, being at a higher level than, say, target games, and teaching basketball in a K-3 setting is maybe not the best approach to developing skills as well. So when we are looking at skill acquisition, it's important to consider are we choosing the right skills, the right progression, the right time of development? Because if we don't choose those skills appropriately, we can start to turn off both boys and girls, for that matter, but we'll start to turn off our participants pretty quick because of their inability or their frustration. And again, physical literacy will start to play into this in a little bit as we talk about that. The climate is also very important. Looking at tasks involving climate versus ego-oriented climate. Tasks involving climate kind of reinforce improvement. They focus on the skills and effort, a lot of peer support. They foster the belief in the value of unique roles of all athletes, and perhaps might result in more enjoyment for some of our participants. Those ego-oriented climates, perhaps, are the ones that might punish for mistakes or have extra practices for games lost. Favoritism for highly skilled teammates or athletes, and often result in very competitiveness amongst athletes because of that or amongst participants. So again, these are just considerations in the development of our programs that we want to be mindful of, that we want to try to generate some tasks involving climate versus those ego-oriented ones that may start to push our participants away. We'll continue on. The female athlete triad is maybe a little bit, in some respects, the information on this came out a number of years ago. It does still exist, I think, in modern research to some degree, but it's something to be aware of. If I gave you a bit of an example, so if I said Jane joined a track team her freshman year, and she trained hard to become a lean, strong sprinter. And when a coach told her that losing a few pounds would improve her performance, she immediately started counting calories, increased the duration of her workout, and she was much too busy to practice with practices, sorry, and meets to notice that she had missed her period, and that she was more worried about the stress fracturing her ankle slowing her down. And although Jane thinks her intense training and disciplined diet are helping in her performance, they may actually be hurting her and ultimately her health. That's not a far stretch of examples that happen within physical activity, in particular within sports teams. But the problem with that is it highlights three particular things that's called the athlete triad. And it's just something, again, to be mindful of if we're coaching young women within sports and activities, is that example leads to potentially disordered eating, amenorrhea, and then osteoporosis. And between those three, it starts to really affect girls' health. So disordered eating, obviously there's a body figure, imaging, media that plays a lot into this, and it's not necessarily helping their athletic performance. Amenorrhea, the exercising intensity and not eating enough calories will lead to decreases in hormones. That help regulate the menstrual cycle, and as a result of that imbalance of hormones, a girl's period may stop or become irregular. And of course, it's normal for girls and young teens to occasionally miss their periods, especially in their first years. But anyways, it's obviously something concerned of. And then the last one, the osteoporosis. So again, around the hormonal response in this overtraining, disordered eating, is that estrogen becomes somewhat lower, and then low estrogen levels combined with poor nutrition, especially low calcium intake, can then lead to osteoporosis, and you start to see those strains, those fractures, etc., stress fractures occur. So not something we're going to necessarily jump to, but there's a lot of evidence that shows that girls that become injured don't often return to the sport of their choice, and those numbers start to decrease. So if we can hold off injury, or if we can be smart about the way that we train young girls in our program, hopefully we can continue to get continue to have enjoyment for them in those activities. So that's our second area around skill acquisition, maybe the more physical components that we want to be mindful of. And then the last one is role models. And we talked about, and this probably is ultimately one of the most challenging ones, when you say you can't be what you can't see. And role models are something important to consider. So why being involved in physical activity? Why is it a good thing? If I could bring a friend or to a class or training that's never played a sport or an activity, you know, what would I tell her about my coach? How would I encourage her to come? What highlights would I potentially share with her? So having role models is critical. So there's a slide in there, and I don't know how well it's come across, but it's a statistic from an organization called CAWS, CAAWS. And if we look at the representation of leadership within sport, you can see that it's highly male-dominant over women. So those numbers of opportunities, or those low numbers, show that there's not very many opportunities for leadership. When we know the reality is that women are equally as capable leaders, and certainly in some cases maybe more critical for the development of those young girls and women. The next couple of slides are my family, so I didn't mean mentioning my family. So I'm super, super fortunate, maybe didn't realize how fortunate I was to have my wife, a bit of a teammate, obviously, in raising these two girls, because she is so active, and really it's quite normal for my kids to wake up and know that my wife Hannah's out on a run, or to participate cheering her on at an event. But the next slide is just of my daughter Sophie on the left with her friends. They're both cheering on their mom. Just to see that, and I think subconsciously they don't necessarily know that it's an important thing. It's just normalized behavior. It's just something that their mom does, and ultimately if they choose to kind of grow up in the same way, physical activity, physical exercise is normal behavior for young girls and for women. The video that I wanted to share, the role model video, I have to send via the link because produced by Nike, I believe, and it just talks about the importance of role models. They have a huge sector of engaging women in sport, so there's a potential resource, still very corporate, but their messaging, I think, is on point in terms of developing girls within sport. So you could certainly check out Nike if you wanted to.
Hey, Chris. Sorry to interrupt. It's Mia. Definitely taking all of this in, and the role model is really important. The one thing that I'm thinking here is the rural communities that I know in the Yukon, and maybe this would apply in NWT and Nunavut as well. I'm not sure how much of a focus there is on sport as opposed to recreational, just playing games. So I may want to sort of open the floor, and again, it depends if you prefer to hold off, but open the floor to what kind of activities do they participate in the after-school program. And, you know, does anybody see girls not participating, or is it an issue, or is it not an issue? Sorry, that's loaded. I could probably ask two questions there. But
no, I think that's good, and I'm open to that, and I may be using sports synonymously with recreation, physical activity, and exercise, though there is some distinction between all those levels for sure, so it's something worthwhile to discuss.
Okay. So if I could open the floor, if anybody wants to press star 6 to unmute, if you have any comments or observations, please feel free to jump in right now.
Hi there, it's Nadine in Brooklyn. How are you?
Hey, Nadine.
Sorry about my crunching carrots and stuff when I wasn't muted. I knew I needed to mute, I just didn't know how to do it.
No worries.
One thing that I've noticed, which to me was very disturbing, when we had Aspen coming down to do after-school fitness with us in the fall and winter, I was doing up the poster and I Googled, in quotations, girl lifting weight, and I was shocked by the number of half-naked selfie pictures of, like, Kim Kardashian style that appeared in the Google results. So to me, it was actually a lot of effort to even find an appropriate graphic for that poster, to just find a teenage girl lifting weights that wasn't sort of sexualized. So I can agree with Chris on, you know, the Google results and stuff like that.
Yeah, there is maybe in I think it's in this video, in the role models video, if I'm not mistaken, or it's in the Voices video about the over-sexualization of women in sports and physical activity, I suppose, in that that broader category. So I'd agree with you 100%, and I think one thing that we collectively, maybe not collectively on this call, but the broader we in the work that kind of the health promotion, if we call it that work that we do, is we almost need to rebrand exercise or rebrand physical activity in some cases and disassociate. A lot of those images, I think, come up because people's belief is that physical activity is going to get them those bodies ultimately that image. And loads and loads of bodies of evidence and research would disagree. Physical activity plays a part for sure, but that's a very, very tiny, tiny part. But the education behind that, I think, is the important thing that in some ways could be a focus. Exercise till you're happy is probably a better way to brand exercise than some of those images that you come across.
And I have another comment that is just a little bit political, so I don't really know if I should say anything, but I think I have to. There was a situation here in my community where the person that's in charge of teaching physical education at the school, and I'm not going to name names because it's a small town, right? But that particular person told a boy in front of the whole gym class that he was doing push-ups like a girl. So, you know, what do you do in that situation when the people that are in charge of teaching fitness say things like that? Because you already said that the role modeling is so important. But, I mean, to say that a boy is doing push-ups like a girl in front of the boy and in front of the girl, to me that's completely unacceptable. But I didn't know what to do with that at the time. Like, what do you do with that?
Yeah, it's unfortunate because that particular circumstance may not happen all over, but certainly the language used. So I kind of see two parts. I see the teaching or the way that the teaching practice is happening needs to be considered and would be very inappropriate. But then also the language used around it, because I would argue that there's no such thing. I think everybody in this call is the same, but there's no such thing as boy push-ups or girl push-ups. The push-up is a push-up. Just depends, I guess, on how you're scaling it to make yourself successful at doing that push-up. So maybe approaching it from the teaching practice aside, maybe approaching it from a language use if you've got that relationship to say, hey, you know, have you considered maybe just saying that that type of push-up is a scale to doing a full plank push-up from the toes. And anybody can do a push-up like that, because I see many boys that need to do, and many men and boys that need to do push-ups, I'm assuming from their knees, but that's just because they're building up the requisite strength to do a full push-up.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe language use, but then obviously that teaching practice is in question too, so that's maybe a little bit more of a challenging discussion.
I just wanted to say I really appreciate, I think that was Nadine coming.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fantastic. Oh, we've actually started outlawing that phrase, the like a girl phrase, in our club.
Mm.
Because it is so charged and it's so old fashioned thinking. Yeah, so I appreciated that, yeah.
Hi, it's Cynthia and Fort Smith.
Go ahead, Cynthia.
So I just have two comments. One, the like a girl comment. That's a great to have brought that up because it doesn't bonkers, and I'm a Boston and a hockey coach, and so I hear that a lot. But I also love that women and girls are reclaiming the like a girl phrase. And I think that it's kind of like reclaiming, you know, language in gay culture, and I think that's a good way to look at it as well, to do that. But I also wanted to share, if anybody hasn't seen the Play Fair documentary that Cause has, I think it was Cause who put it out, but it's called Play Fair, and it's about an hour-long documentary on the state of women's sport and leadership in our country. So if anybody hasn't seen that, that's a really great documentary. And although specifically looks at sport, I think it is the idea that women and girls don't have the same opportunities that men do, even in this point in time, and that despite sport kind of mandate for women and girls in sport, it's not really happening.
Cool. Yeah, it definitely is a big ship to turn around a little bit, and it's going to take a lot of effort, but I haven't heard of that, since I'm excited to check that out. And
great documentary. It's got like Wickenheiser and Katie Humphries and Sugar Mom, and just, you know, it's all the sort of big names. It, so.
Thanks, everyone. Is there anybody else out there that has a question or a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to make a quick comment, just asking, just because everyone had sort of maybe negative experiences, like maybe in head mentions, just something that we experience quite a bit. But I had a really positive experience with one of our kids. He's about 10, and I train often with body sports as well as athletes, and I also run programs like boxing, so we do have those experiences. But he came up to me, which is really funny, in front of a bunch of bodybuilding guys that are about 20, and said, "One day, Ashton, I will have leg sores and I will squat like you too." And it's interesting, just because he doesn't see gender, because he's had both his entire life, that could quickly change. But he's the one, when he comes into class, he sees both women and men squatting, which maybe is a little bit different. But I just thought it was, you know, a more positive anecdote, that it didn't occur to him that he's saying that he wanted life like a girl.
Participant has left the conference.
So the intruder?
That's a cool point.
Yeah, this is Cindy and Carmack. I guess where I'm more involved with particularly recreation more so than sport. A lot of sport tends to be done at the school, but we do run a sports and games program at the rec center in the evening. So in our at the school program with the kids ages 5 to 12, I don't find any issues of, like, boy and girl issues. Everyone participates and plays the same games. The girls love them just as much as the boys and vice versa. And the staff that I have working, they do a variety of games that will pique everybody's interest. So we've never had that issue. And then the leader that I had working for our evening sports program, I hired her not just because she was female, but because she was an older high school student, but she was in that clique of all the other high school students, so I thought she would be a good fit to try to get some of the other youth out, and she's also a really good role model just as a person in general, so nothing to do with her being a female, but just with the kids in general to try to get them out so that they are more active.
Hmm. And that's that relationship piece I think being highlighted there.
Yeah.
Hi, thank you again. Go ahead, Cynthia.
So, it's great to hear sort of positive things, and I think we talked earlier about role modeling and setting the environment and stuff. So this will be the second year we're doing it. We're running an all-female hockey camp in the NBC. Last year we had only female coaches on the ice. This year we're going to have mostly female coaches on the ice. We'll have one or two male coaches that are going to come on. One particularly is the goalie coach for the national women's hockey team, so we're not going to count him. But when we had our camp last year, it was amazing to talk to the girls about how great having this all-girls experience was for them, because although, again, you know, living in a small community, many of them only ever played with one or two other girls, and always played on a co-ed high school team, coming together and playing, they said, you know, playing with girls and having female coaches was just a really different experience for them. And one of the kids said that she was thinking about quitting hockey until she'd come to camp, because she's then, you know, started thinking about that when she leaves the community and goes away to college, university, she'll be able to play more girls-oriented hockey, and
a bigger role in it. So I think that idea about, you know, smoking is so hard for girls to have the opportunity to play in girls' sports, that, you know, you get their opportunity, is really amazing for us.
And this is Cindy again, and CarMax. I used to live in Whitehorse and was involved with hockey there, and they've got a really good female hockey program happening there, and it brings in girls from all over the Yukon, so that's been really successful. For the most part, they have two male coaches. Who've been fantastic and really developed the program. There's definitely a lack of female coaches here, but female hockey certainly is very well developing.
That's great to hear. Those experiences, there's a statistic, and I'm not too sure who came up with this research, but so girls that are not active by the age of 10 have less than 10% chance of being active later on in life. So those opportunities for girls to get together at those younger ages, and maybe not less than 10 necessarily, but gives them a social network, and it gives them those relationships. So even when they do leave that experience, perhaps they have a bit of a developed relationship with other girls that are in recreation physical activity that they can potentially rely on or connect to.
The participant has left the conference.
So I think those are, I think those are important. I can finish up pretty quick just so we don't lose everybody. I don't know what our
time
is, an hour.
No, go ahead, Chris.
But certainly if anybody has anything else, and again, I think some of these are very surface level conversations, and I think there's a lot deeper experiences or things that we can connect on. Hopefully something might resonate a little bit with us about some strategies that we can utilize to engage young girls in physical activity recreation. One in particular that I think we can give and revisit is, if you're working with schools, perhaps the comprehensive school health approach, which ultimately is based on a socio-ecological model. And maybe we'll flip to the socio-ecological model because the relevance might be a little bit more, and some of us may have encountered this. But if we want to make change on an individual level, we cannot just work on an individual level to actually make that change sustainable. So if I want to, if I know that girls' health and well-being is something that I'm concerned about and I want to make those changes, I can't just be working with young girls in physical activity and recreation settings. I need to consider a bunch of different levels to make that change sustainable for them, because ultimately they interact in many different facets beyond just our setting. So if I want to make change on the individual level, I have to work on the knowledge, attitudes, the skills, so some of those things that we talked about earlier today. But I have to also be cognizant of the interpersonal level, organizational level, the community level, and public policy. The broader we can go up on those concentric circles, the greater likelihood that we'll make sustainable change on that individual level. If we think about us, and if we're trying to start a physical activity program for ourselves, I want to start running as an example. If I keep telling myself that I want to run, it's likely not enough. But if I have a friend or a family member who's going to be involved with me to do that, my chances are going to increase. If my work environment or the community setting, sorry, the organizational setting that I'm in, allows me to go physical activity or walking meetings or whatever the case, it's going to further support that change that I'm trying to make. And then again, on the community level, and then in public policy, as it increases. Public policy is probably the hardest one to affect, but if we can work through this socio-ecological model, it's something that that really will support us. So if we are trying to make sustainable change in girls' health and well-being, we want to make sure we're tackling that interpersonal level. We're educating families about the importance of role models or the importance of physical activity in young girls. Organizationally, we want to be educating those organizations about women in leadership, the important role that plays, and then also addressing the community. Sorry, I'm outside, as you might know, and you can hear a horn in the background. Making connections with the community to support that that as well. So we can kind of, I'll go quickly through these last bits just so we don't have to lose anybody, but I'll send the link to these videos just because the links aren't there. So the socio-ecological model is one, that's where the comprehensive school health model is built upon, but if you know that socio-ecological model first and foremost, it really will support us in all our work. But the other one is considering physical literacy. In your mind, if I ask you, and you might know a little bit about physical literacy, but this is something that is important. The consensus statement on physical literacy last June, there was about 15 or so countries got together in Vancouver. A lot of surveys ahead of time that went out to see what the consensus was on this definition. But the definition really has four parts. And if we, in our minds, wanted to create a physical literacy enriched experience, we often just go to the physical. I'm going to have a variety of movements or a variety of equipment, or I'm going to have children and youth move in a variety of ways to increase their physical literacy. But we have to rely just as much on the motivation and confidence piece, the knowledge and understanding, as well as the desire for engagement in physical activities for life. Those pieces will really support, I think, girls' health and well-being, and ultimately anybody's health and well-being, to participate in physical activities for life, be it sport, recreation, exercise, whatever language piece that we're using there. That goes into a little bit more depth on the consensus statement, so you can see what each of those domains really means. But if we're creating those experiences for young girls, we want to consider the skill acquisition piece that might be more the physical one, but we may want to consider the role modeling that might be the motivation and confidence supporting piece there. The I lost my train of thought here. But all of those will fit in, the acceptance and the social connection as well, the knowledge and understanding will play in there. If we have experiences that really foster a physical literacy environment, then I think that's ultimately the base level of positive experiences for girls in physical activity pursuits. There's a bit of a quote here that positive youth development through physical activity is largely dependent on the quality. And that's where I would say physical literacy. All four of those pieces contribute to the quality of experience and the expertise of the adult to implement and manage these programs. So that basically wraps it up. But if we could combine that socio-ecological model, we could combine those three action pieces with physical literacy, then I think we'll do a good job at developing strong, resilient participants in physical activity, specifically with young girls. So I hope something may have resonated with you. Again, it was I still think in some respects it's very surface level. There's a lot of expertise on this call. But I know going through this, like I said early on, the importance of role models was something I had maybe not considered early on, but certainly is very evident when you stop to think about it. Skill acquisition and how we teach young girls and just young children in particular, some activities they may not developmentally be ready to tackle those, and that'll have a huge impact on how they view their that physical activity experience. But if we use physical literacy as a basis, if we really develop our programs to connect to all four of those attributes, then I think we're supporting young girls' health and well-being. So thank you. I hope it sparked something. I'm certainly open to further communication, or if you want to connect with EverActive Schools or myself, you can find us online at everactive.org, or you can send me an email, chris@everactive.org, and I can connect with you there too. So thank you, Mia. Thank you, and I'll certainly open it up to questions, or if there's any examples. Programs that we want to share similar experiences. If we have time, we can certainly talk about those.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. I do appreciate it. And thanks for taking the time. I try really hard to keep it to the time frame because I know, you know, at this time in some of the territories, they're running off because the kids are coming.
Of course.
So I'm just cognizant of that. If anybody has a burning desire right now to ask a question to Chris, please feel free. I want you to hang on to the line just for 1 minute. because I have a question for everybody first before we all go. So is there anybody that has something they need to say or want to say?
One person I forgot to mention up in UConn who many of you may have connected with is a woman named Stephanie Dixon, a para-athlete, a woman, an advocate for girls in sports. I haven't had an opportunity to meet her outside of just electronic communication, but she's a good friend of a colleague. So I did want to give her a bit of a shout-out and certainly an asset in your area that could support the collective work that you do.
Thanks, Chris. And Stephanie is an amazing person. I miss her as a motivational speaker, but I've heard really good things about her, so thank you for that. I do want to thank you, Chris, again for taking the time, and we're definitely going to be in touch. Are you okay if I include your email in the email that I'm going to send out to everybody?
Yeah, please. I think the conversations after this will certainly strengthen our work and this presentation in particular, and I'd be happy to help where I can.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I think what's probably going to be easiest, I may do this, for everybody that's listening, this will be our last conference call for the summer break, and then I'm going to resume calls starting in early fall, like late August maybe. What I would love to know from everybody, and as I said, I might do a doodle poll, is it would be nice to have a given day of the week. Sort of, we'll do this once a month, and it may be every Monday, as an example. And then, of course, what time frame is most convenient to you? And I have to go, as you know, with the majority. That works for most people. So that's one request, is what day of the week and what time works best. And again, I have to take into the consideration the time change for NWT and Nunavut. So that's one part. And the other part is, I am looking for ideas on topics. What are some discussions you'd like to have around? And I have a few from the previous ASTP conference in January, but I'm definitely looking for more ideas. So I'm just going to leave you with that. And feel free to email me at any time with any specifics. And aside from that, I think we are ready to end the call. So, without further ado, I wish all of you a great summer. I know I'll see some of you throughout the summer, but NWT, and if anybody's from Nunavut, thank you so much for joining us. Really hope that you're able to join us again in late summer, early fall.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Karen. The participant has left the conference.
Care, everybody. And
the participant has left the conference.
Chris,
I'm still here.
Okay. Chris, you hang on until they leave. I normally...
Participant has left the conference.
I press something to end the entire...
Participant has left the conference.
Keep going.
The participant has left the conference.
Okay.
Hello.
Yeah, and Chris, are you still there?
Yeah, we are.
I'm waiting for everybody to hang up. Hey, Jana.
Hi. Chris, I just had a quick question for you if you have a second.
Yeah, you bet.
Totally not on the topic at the moment, but you work forever after school, so are you guys affiliated with Decent for Life?
Good friends of us, yeah. We say they're a sister network.
Okay. And so are you based out of UNC as well?
Yep. I share at the across the way. I share in other offices.
Okay. That's cool. So I did my education degree in phys ed at UNC, and so I know Joyce really well. I think she did work forever after school, but doesn't come now. And then my sister Melanie Tate did a placement with Be Fit for Life as well. So. Yeah,
all right,
an interesting connection there. So, I appreciated your presentation, and I definitely will the link stay open to your Google Doc, to the PowerPoint?
Yeah, I'll leave that there, and I'll try to maybe I'll drop in some links in the next couple of days to those videos in that same folder, so you should have access to them.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, Jana, the videos are really cool, actually.
Yeah. I wrote them down. I definitely want to check them out. It's so funny how interconnected everything is, because I did work at a school last year as a girls' phys ed specialist, and so it was interesting because from grade 5 through 9, they did gender separate phys ed, and I was always kind of on and off about that topic. All through university, we debate it and have to write papers on it and stuff, and it was really interesting actually teaching it, and there were definitely benefits, but I could see once they were back co-ed again, also some of the challenges with it. So, it's definitely interesting to think about.
Yeah,
so what did you find, Jana, like when you were teaching the age group? Did you find that girls were not as motivated to be physically active, or was that not an issue?
Well, it's interesting. The 3 points, Chris, that you bring up in your slide are fantastic, because that was exactly my experience. So the big one was because the girls were in their classes by themselves all the time. Like, they would have an all-girls class for everything from grade 5 to 9. So they didn't think any different that they were separated for that age. And so they were already with their friends, and they were comfortable with their friends. So that whole piece kind of took care of itself. And then, of course, just like in any group, you're going to have the dynamic of the people who have sport and recreation very much as a part of their life, and then the ones who could care less about it. But the thing that I really liked was that skill acquisition piece, because, for example, I had a group of grade 9 girls who we were doing a football unit, and they, when we were starting it, they hated football, didn't want to do it, and so I like really broke it down into, like, first we're going to learn how to throw a football properly, because I think once you learn how to throw and catch a football, you might actually enjoy the rest of it, and then teaching them just the actual real components of it, so downs and touchdowns and just the strategy behind it and everything, and pretty soon it was one of their favorite things that on outdoor ed trips and stuff, they'd bring a football and pick it up on their own, and they'd make teams, and they were talking about downs and touchdowns and all that, so just, it was really neat to watch the transformation, and I think so much of it is they're not confident in their skill, so a lot of them, they can't throw a football, and so if they're ever in a group, they aren't confident to do that, so then they'll just avoid it, whereas if they do learn that skill, then they'll definitely join in. So I think, yeah, from my experiences, the 3 pieces that you touched on are very, very relevant, and I was going to say from the role model piece, as a female in a recreation setting, it is so important to stress getting involved in those leadership roles. So it's hard because we can sit and criticize that there are no females in the leadership roles, but then when asked to coach teams or be involved in situations, the people who step up are not females most of the time. And so it's changing the mindset of the people in the leadership roles as well, I think, that could really make a difference. So.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, when is somebody going to do something about this? And then you realize, wait a minute, I am somebody.
Yeah, exactly. It's easy to point fingers and say, man, there's so much wrong with this, but you're not see what you can do. So.
Yeah, no,
yeah. It really resonated. That was great.
Thanks, Dad. I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah,
so Jana and I hired Jana as a youth adventure camp leader. And 2 seasons, right, Jana?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Amazing. That's just amazing. She just clicked with the other person that I hired, and the blend of skills that the two of them had. It was wonderful. And these were co-ed groups. There's just as many boys, if not more boys. So really nice in terms of that role model piece, actually. They just delivered such a phenomenal program. I was really, really happy. So.
Cool.
So I'm still recording. I guess I'm just give me a second. It's good to have. I'm glad I did keep the recording going, because I think, Jana, what you shared is really, really important for everybody to hear. So just give me a second. I'm just going to stop recording now.
Okay. Thank you.